If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
I'm feeling kind of basic today. Top five side ones. Track ones. Janie Jones, Clash, from The Clash. Mm. Let's Get It On, Marvin Gaye from Let's Get It On. Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit off of Nevermind.
Oh no, Rob, that's not obvious enough. Not at all. How about Point of No Return on Point of No Return? Lewis, so you can get up.
Shut up. White Light, White Heat, Velvet Underground.
Okay, that would be on my list.
Though not on mine.
Massive Attack, No Protection. The song is Radiation Ruling the Nation.
Kind of a new record. Very nice, Rob. A sly declaration of new classic status slipped into a list of old safe ones. Couldn't you be any more obvious than that, Rob? How about, The Beatles? Beethoven. Track one, side one of the Fifth Symphony. How can someone who has no interest in music own a record store?
Great movie, great scene. Why did we open the show with that today, Producer Griffin?
It is National Record Store Day.
Ah.
And also, that's from High Fidelity. Starring John Cusack, Jack Black, and a couple others. And that's a movie that takes place at a fictional record store, Championship Vinyl, in Chicago.
So National Record Day, is that a celebration of vinyl? It can't be a CD, it can't be digital,
Record
right?
Store Day.
Record Store Day, yeah.
So, yeah, it's all about going out to your record store and having conversations like that, I guess.
Which, that conversation was, though, about, like, making a list of great songs or songs that follow a theme, something like that,
yeah,
right?
They just pick different themes and always give their top fives. And so that was side ones, track ones. First song on the album. What albums have the best first song? And so that was his list.
Do people still make lists like that?
Sure, yeah. I think
really?
So.
I mean, because that was a conversation once upon a time. And then a good mixtape was always something you took pride in. I guess now you would still make a mix, but maybe not. I don't know that people care so much anymore about the craft of a great 1 through 12, 10, 15, whatever. How many tracks? I'm speaking a little out of school here, Griff, but I don't know.
Thinking like that encourages things like Record Store Day and people to, like, the resurgence in vinyl purchasing comes from people who feel like that's kind of over with, but they don't want it to be over.
Yeah.
I would disagree with you on that. I understand why you feel that way, but I think that those people are still out there.
But you know, because you used to make here's my world. You would say, okay, I love this girl. I'm going to give her 12 songs that talk to us. Or I got a buddy and we're driving to the baseball game, and so here's 12 great road songs for baseball. Whatever the theme was, right? But you would download it. You would tape it onto a cassette tape, and then you would physically hand it to them. You would gift them the tape, and then they would pop it in and listen to it. So what is that exchange like now? How does that process work now? Do you say, okay,
yeah,
here's...
I think you could do it like that. You make a blank CD. I mean,
you can't make a cassette tape anymore. They would laugh at you.
No.
You would have to stick it into your heater in your car. There's no place for the cassette tape to go, Griffin.
I do know people that are in bands that do, like, exclusive cassettes. That's a small faction of people that I know.
Really? So they're putting the music on a medium that no one has access to then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I guess you could transfer it via CD.
Well, what do you want? Do you want them to do that or not do it? Because you say, well, you can't do that anymore. And
well,
then I tell you some people do it, and then you laugh at it. Kristen, I think, wants to say something about this.
What? What does she want to say?
Well, I wanted to share what I do now because I was huge into the mix CDs.
I do want people to do this, Griffin, Kristen. I'm just saying, how do you accomplish it? Because there was something touching, tactile, and old school about handing somebody a cassette or maybe
but
a
now,
CD.
But now, I'll tell you what it is. It's now the Spotify mix. So I'm in a new relationship, and he made me my Spotify mix with a quirky little title, and it's awesome.
So then how does he send the mix to you, Dak?
You get a...
I know. Is that wailing and gnashing of teeth in the background? Am I completely out of it here? Keep going, Kristen.
We're just laughing at you.
Yeah. In my Spotify inbox, I get a link to the mix.
And then the songs are all queued up there in the order that he's...
Yeah, and he took very special care in what he picked.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Okay.
And if you're,
it's not just a random, like, oh, let's throw songs together.
Right,
it's like
right. Okay.
Curating.
If you're on Spotify, you can see the playlist that anybody has made if they make them public. So, like, yeah. I'm working on, not for any specific person, but a summer mix because that's how I like to spend my time.
Yeah, sure.
And and I'm in the midst of that. I've got a good 7 or 8. I've got a few more to add. And that's what people do now.
Yeah.
Well, I actually went through his Spotify history and found a couple of old mixes that he had made for ex-girlfriends. And then I looked at the songs to make sure they weren't like, you know,
oh,
that wasn't
Lord.
His standard
No good
mix.
Can come from that search, Kristen. That is a bad use
well,
of your time.
I was curious on what music he had. And then all of a sudden I see like, you know, ex-girlfriend's names, birthday mix. And I'm like, what?
Well, what did you expect? That's a thing people do. That's
I know.
That as long as he's not doing it now.
No, 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 no. And you can see the dates on the song. So 2012, I think I'm okay.
We can live with that. It wasn't Thursday.
No.
And then and then you also need to maybe take care to make sure that some of the songs aren't the same. Presumably,
oh, yes.
Right, Deck? They would be exclusive songs for you.
Yes. And- oh, if I would have opened up her playlist and saw that it was exact playlist you sent me, relationship would have been over.
Yeah. Now, so Griff, then what would be a good use of my brain or time today or this weekend to help out National Record Shop Day? A, go to a record shop.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a thing all over the country. Record stores have a bands playing or something like that. They'll have some sort of fanfare at the location today.
Yeah.
So that's going on right now.
First, go out and buy a turntable. Then bring the turntable home and go, oh, crap, I need a receiver. Then go get a receiver. Then go get...
You don't need a receiver. There are many, many record players.
Now. You don't have to run through an amp,
no, the
tuner,
speaks are
receiver.
Built right into the...
How
they look
about
like
that?
Little suitcases.
Well, these kids, what'll they think of next?
It's portable now.
And then you run... And do you need speakers with these turntables?
No,
too?
they're built right into it. I mean, if you want your... Like, I have a record... Like, a higher-end record player that has computer speakers that I plug into it.
Well, that's a shame, because you need these great big furniture-sized things made out of wood.
Not anymore.
And I'm sorry, I went to sleep in 1978, and I just woke up. Have I missed some things? Because
I did see an article that says why your records sound better on your father's record player than the one you currently have.
Thank
so.
You. Oh. Happy National Record Day, everybody.
There's a new genre that's going to blow your mind. It's called hip-hop. And
okay.
You said you went to sleep in 1978.
No.
I mean, it's kind of like Rapper's Delight, but was that out in 78?
It's like disco, but without the thump-thump or with the thump-thump. I don't know.
A lot of rhyming.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Sick beats.
Hey, why don't you guys shut up, okay? That would be a good idea. That was a joke. So then, Griff, the joy of it, though, is then coming up with a list, too. I mean, they're different things, but if you're going to get out the old vinyl, it would be fun to maybe dream up a good list of songs to make for an occasion, a day, or a person.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'd be kind of fun, too.
I think so.
I want to play something for you. Speaking of music, I interviewed this week the star of a movie called Presenting Princess Shaw. Have you guys heard of Princess Shaw at all? I suspect not. She lives in, you know, somewhat obscurity. She's a YouTuber, a person who posts music on YouTube just for the sake of doing it and in the hopes that somebody will discover her. She doesn't play instruments, and she doesn't work with the band. She just writes her songs, holds her phone up to the mirror, and sings a song. And she posts a bunch of these songs. So she goes by the stage name of Princess Shaw. She's a 39-year-old woman living in New Orleans. She works at a senior center. She, you know, helps serve food and care for elderly people in this facility. But then when she has free time, she does this. She'll go to little local music things that nobody shows up to. She sings in obscurity. And there's this producer named Kudiman. He's described as an Israeli mashup video artist. And he was looking to make a movie about these people that just post their music on the internet, on YouTube, hoping it'll find a place. And his idea was to mix it down and make it into something if he could. The movie is about that process, about what happened. So there's a guy in an apartment in Israel. There's a woman who works at a daycare center in New Orleans. She does not know him. He doesn't know her. And she doesn't know that he is now cultivating her music and producing it. So we have videos from both ends of the world as we watch these two people. A video camera was following her a little bit because eventually somebody said, hey, we're making a movie about people that post music. But they didn't tell her anything about the guy in Israel or the fact that they're mixing it down. So I'll play for you two tracks or two cuts. The first one is her just singing to herself, essentially. There's no audience. And this is about 30 seconds of what her voice sounds like.
I thought you were together, a big fancy man, but you act like a boy, and you make me so mad. I'm texting your phone, and you don't ever reply. I thought you and I were gonna be friends for life. No, you should have stayed still. You could stay here in love.
What do you think? Pretty good, right? So then this guy in Israel says, okay, let me take the music. Let's see what we can do with it.
Sitting on the window seat, staring at the rain outside, asking you why you don't love me at all, babe. I'm stuck in the same place.
In the movie, they capture her singing or playing this music for the first time, and the look on her face is amazing. You see how he kind of cut the music up a little bit, stopped her vocals, you know, laid down that music bed, totally did it. She didn't know. And then they said, hey, we're here to make more of the movie about people that sing. Look at this. And all of a sudden, she's going viral. She has over a million views. Watched the movie the other day. It's called Presenting Princess Shaw, and it's fascinating, and you'll love her songs. Her music is, she's a good writer. Nobody knew about her. You know, she's just toiling away, a single woman there in New Orleans, and I don't know if anything's going to come of this. In fact, when I talked to her, I think I was more animated about her making $1 million than she was. John Williams talking to you on WGN. I'm reading from an article here at Syracuse.com. It says, you can thank the Emancipation Day holiday in the District of Columbia for the extra time. Emancipation Day is a celebration of the anniversary of the Compensated Emancipation Act signed by Abraham Lincoln, April 16, 1862. It freed 3,000 slaves in the District of Columbia. Since April 16th is a Saturday this year, the holiday is celebrated the day before, April 15th. And since the Internal Revenue Service is based in the District of Columbia, the tax filing deadline was switched to Monday because those people aren't working that day. In Massachusetts and Maine, the deadline is Tuesday, April 19th, because Monday is Patriots Day in those states. We need to line up just enough holidays so that we can delay it as long as possible. I have one interesting tax statistic for you about this. Wealthier Americans pay higher taxes than middle or lower income earners. You knew that. Wealthier Americans pay higher taxes, more in taxes, and at the end of the day, they pay in the highest tax brackets than lower or middle income earners. That makes sense. The wealthiest 1% of the population earns 19% of the income and pays 37% of the income tax. The wealthiest 1% of the population earns 19% of the income but pays 37% of the income tax. The top 10% pays 68% of the tab. The bottom 50% earns 13% of the income but pays just 3% of the taxes. That last sentence is most interesting and problematic, isn't it? The bottom 50% is only paying 3% of the taxes, but they're also only earning 13% of the income. That is the problem, and I don't know how you fix that. Amy Schumer was on with Jimmy Fallon the other night. She's got a new boyfriend. I guess he's from Palatine. This is very funny. Here's her describing meeting her boyfriend's mother.
I met your boyfriend backstage, and
yes.
He's a very nice gentleman.
Isn't he nice?
He is. I think he's cool. Do you enjoy, is everything working out well? Are you enjoying him?
We're great. We met and, like, totally fell in love, and it's been really good. And yeah. It became viral internet, like, news. And
I saw you everywhere.
Right? It's yeah. Because I think he's really cute, and I think people were like, what? Like, dating? He has all his teeth? Like, people were shocked. They were shocked.
People said... He has all his teeth. But have you met his mom?
I met his whole family. They're great. And I told them, when I was like, look, journalists are going to call you because it's what they do. And they're going to come to the house. And they did. And his family's so nice. They live in Illinois. His mom's the most excited person you'll ever meet in your life. She's just like, everything is like, oh. And her name's Deb. And she's like, oh, my gosh. Like, she's like the girls. You know the girls on The Bachelor? Whenever they walk into a hotel room, they act like they've never seen one before. They're like, ah! A couch! They're like, a mug! You know, you're like... So I told her, I'm like, Deb, they're going to call you. Just say no comment. And she's like, oh, I got it, Aim. Don't you worry. No comment. Not a problem. Not even 10 minutes later, I get a Google alert that says, Time Magazine, that Deb was like, I've never heard of her before in my life. Went too far.
Took it too far, Deb.
Yeah, we do sound like that. Or at least some folks in Chicago do. Let's get you into the news. What's that, Bob?
No comment.
We were on a Steve Bertrand organized trip to Ireland with some people who were from Chicago, of course. And they loved being in Ireland. And these ladies were very Catholic. And they knew all the parishes. Oh, have you been to St. Anne's? I'm not gonna find that voice, but... But when you are in the company of real Chicago-accented people, it's pretty cool. It's, you know, it's not good or bad. It's just so pronounced. It's kind of funny. And, boy, she fell right into it. Bob's going to do the news in his own voice. The Mincing Rascals have a lot to say. You'll hear that next on WGN. Thank you, Bob. Good to hear you. And, as always, we enjoy listening to Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, and this week Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. We, on Fridays, record a podcast called The Mincing Rascals, and we feature it here on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio on Saturdays. So here's our weekly excerpt from that. You will hear... I believe it's Eric Zorn first, and the conversation here has turned to Denny Hastert and what should happen to Denny Hastert.
I think that you have to give this, I mean, this man is old and sick, but I think he has to spend time in prison. The government has asked for only 6 months. The judge is signaling that he may be going higher than that. The judge seems like he has very little patience with some of the things that Hastert has been saying and doing before the sentencing, which is coming up again later this month. I'm looking for maybe 2 years, and I think that he has to go to prison because you have to say that you cannot outrun this kind of offense. You have to, you know, no matter how old and sick you are, you have to pay the price.
But it's a funny thing because since we really don't even have charges against him, we're still going to punish him. We're going to convict and punish him for those things anyway, right? I mean, if this is the run-of-the-mill sort of...
Well, we do have charges against him, and we have a guilty plea, so you sentence him.
But he was being extorted and was... Think about that. So really, the only thing that he's going to go to jail for is he was being extorted, and the way he was positioning the money is illegal. And when the FBI came to his door, maybe to try and help him from getting extorted... They realize that, in fact, he is the guy who's committed a crime for which we can't prosecute him. So what we're going to do, though, is take that crime of him being extorted and illegally positioning money, and we're going to punish him as much as we can for something that he's not been convicted of.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's an underlying offense, certainly.
I'm okay with it, and if that means 5 years... And we feel that's the best we can get, then we all have to move on.
Well, I think we may even raise this last week. When somebody comes to you, as this individual A came to Hastert, was it in 2010 or something like that? It was and said, I remember this from the 70s and I want you to pay me some money, or whatever he said, however that conversation went down. Or maybe he said, I'm going to sue you. And Hastert said, well, no, let's settle out of court quietly without a suit being filed, which is perfectly legal, by the way. I'm wondering how that conversation went and why Hastert didn't say, you know, like, hey, that was 40 years ago. I don't remember that. I don't remember things that way. You know, see you in court. And I think he might have said that if he didn't realize, if he didn't know that there were other victims out there. And
right.
You know, Scott's assurance.
Well, how would you have played it, Eric? You're just thinking that reasonably he might have said, no, I'll take my chances in the court of public opinion or a court of law?
I think he might have said, you know, that he might have said, you don't have a case. It's going to be your 40-year-old memory against my 40-year-old memory of one night in one hotel room. I don't think there's a
unless there's more people that would come
but
forward.
He knows. That's why he's $3 million for that one incident. That's a lot. That is a lot. You know.
Yeah, especially for a public servant. He's made a lot of money in the private sector since.
Oh yeah.
This is the man who was two breaths from the White House. Maybe it's easy to make too much about that, but he had risen to the pinnacle of American politics and had this secret in his closet.
Not to mention supporting legislation that would sentence serial sexual offenders to life imprisonment.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons, Scott, why he would say maybe one of those massages wasn't illegal.
Do you notice how much we're giggling through this? And I think it's just it's a defensive sort of thing, but it's a little, I mean, I'm doing it too, but just think of it. We're talking about this. And we're just giggling from time to time.
I'm giggling because I'm angry.
I know you are. I wasn't tickling you out, too. Yeah, I mean, I've done it, too.
But it's just such an uncomfortable thing.
It is, Steve.
People who abuse children
I'm giggling because I'm angry. I've never heard that. I'm like, that's good.
No, but it's also just astonishing, isn't it? I mean, really, sometimes you laugh at the absurdity of it all. And this is the damnedest thing. Now, we'll continue to follow this story. Just since we're going down absurd row, can we talk about Mel Reynolds for a second then?
Oh, my goodness.
There, I just giggled.
All right. Again, another sexual
welcome
predator.
To Illinois. As we keep it in Illinois, go ahead, Eric. What's your thought about this story?
The interesting turn this week was that Mel Reynolds was arrested in the Atlanta airport, which struck me as kind of overkill. I guess they confiscated his phone and his computer. He's a couple of days late reporting on these, I think they're misdemeanor tax charges. I mean, they're sort of small-time charges, but the judge is really angry at him. And he says, well, I'm over in Africa. I'm caring for my daughter. She's tragically ill. And then we look on social media and his daughter's jetting around the country, jetting into Europe and talking about doing squat exercises. And stuff. The story gets stranger and stranger. And Mel Reynolds is just one of these completely compellingly bizarre figures.
He does not get it.
I was at the news conference in, it must have been 88 or 90 or something like that, when he was running against Gus Savage for Congress. And he called us together and there were bullet holes, quote unquote bullet holes in his office window. Do you remember that, Eric?
Yeah,
and he had a bandage on his forehead.
Because
he was injured by flying glass because supporters of Gus Savage were trying to intimidate him out of the race. And at the time, look, I mean, I was one of them that thought, hey, this is a bright guy, right?
Rhodes Scholar.
Rhodes Scholar. This is the guy who's going to be the great leader out of the south side of Chicago.
Oh, yeah. He was just like Jesse Jackson Jr., who was another one of these people who was supposed to be the coming figure.
Right,
I mean,
right.
anyone thought there was going to be an African-American president?
Boy, we have so many cases of disappointment, don't we? And then Reynolds, convicted in 95 on charges of criminal sexual abuse, child pornography, and obstruction of justice for having sex with a 16-year-old former campaign intern. And I think that's why the judge or any of us are really impatient with him. I mean, who really cares if he's a day late or if he has to wear an ankle bracelet or if he's going to contest some 4 counts of tax evasion, you know, whatever. But it's this other stuff, I think, that plagues him and our opinion of him.
He doesn't seem to be living in our world.
We haven't talked politics at all. Let's just do a quick whip around here. Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton had a debate on CNN. It was the most contentious the two of them have been, though they are still much more alike than they are unlike, say, the Republicans, of course. Any takeaways from the debate last night?
It was like a wrestling match. The audience was so into it. I've never heard it.
It was
terrible. Couldn't watch it.
It was almost Republican.
We need to take the audience. I know. I was wondering, what would these things be like if the audience wasn't there? Because it's kind of gross.
I had the same thought. I think, why? Yeah. Let them applaud at the end.
It's a sport. It's not really a good way to pick a president.
And that's how they structure these things. Now I am going to sound like the old fart that I am. And that is, remember, they would instruct the audience not to respond.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And the rare times they did, it was like 1984 when Reagan said to Mondale, I won't use my opponent's relative youth and inexperience. And it was a funny moment, so that was a laugh. But that was the only time there was applause or laughter or anything. They were instructed, don't respond. You're here, you're passive viewers.
And I'm sure that will be the way for the general election. But you know what, really? And I stopped watching it last night because they weren't just cheering the answers. They were cheering the questions. You know, when they were.
I know.
When there
was
a question that was going to go after Hillary Clinton or go after Bernie, the other sides, people started cheering the question.
Cheering and cheering, yeah. It was like a wrestling match. If you turned it off, you missed, I think, Hillary Clinton not giving a adequate answer to this issue of the transcripts of the speeches that she gave to Goldman Sachs. They have been asking for this transcripts of these speeches over and over again for months now, and she keeps coming up with the strangest, lamest excuses for not disgorging these transcripts, which she does have.
What was
she said, "I'll disclose everything when everybody else
when
does.
That
for
becomes
paid speeches,
when that yeah. becomes the standard." And Bernie Sanders said, "Well, I'll give you the transcripts of all the speeches I've given to Goldman Sachs, which is zero."
But isn't there an issue with Sanders' tax returns? He hasn't
How
released
about
those.
That? That was phenomenal to me. So
my
then
wife
she said,
does. I don't know what the hell's going on.
So Clinton, to try to deflect, she says, "Well, look, we have a standard where everyone releases their taxes. Why hasn't Senator Sanders released his taxes?" And Senator Sanders says, "Well, my wife does the taxes, and she's been on the road with me." What?
I will bet Scott's house in Alabama that there's no, that there is nothing,
nothing
interesting.
There
is nothing interesting in Bernie Sanders.
Oh, I disagree. I suspect he's probably worth a heck of a lot more than he leads on. And
so what? What's the point of that?
Well, because if you're going to wail against the 1% and you are the 1%, then it begs a bit of hypocrisy.
Well, you know, that's a good point. Maybe that's true. But for me, just the ludicrous answer, like, "Well, I can't do it because my wife is campaigning with me," that's not an excuse.
Yeah. Send
you know, it works against Hillary, too, and this is so artificial, but there it is. It's her delivery.
Oh, I was watching that
she
last
She drones.
Yeah. God, we had the exact same thought. I was watching this, and rather than raise the volume and frankly, the shrillness, she doesn't have a great voice, and that just happens to be her biology. Of her vocal cords, not
on behalf
else.
Of Kristen McQuarrie, I will just ding you for that.
No, that's all I'm saying.
She's not here to do that, so I'm doing it on her behalf.
But my point is, as someone who grew up in a broadcasting home, my father was in television for decades, I would have done ratcheted back half a volume, deliver it more soberly. He's going, you know, so, and it also makes the difference between those two much more stark. You have this guy, "I think that you should blah, blah, blah." So you have crazy grandpa, and she could come and say, "Bernie, what we need to do here really is there's a compromise." And she had some good moments talking about compromise.
But that gets us back to where we started. She couldn't speak in a normal voice last night. It wasn't
they were shouting each other out.
Well, and the crowd,
and the
she
crowd,
had.
Yeah.
I mean, every time they started to be an answer, they were out shouting the crowd. It just wasn't possible.
Can I finish?
I mean, I get that.
Can I finish?
Yeah.
No,
can
you
I finish?
Hold on.
You
can
I
hold
finish?
On. No, we're doing it. Well, nobody thinks that Paul Ryan's going to be the next president now, right? Despite Eric Zorn's exhortations.
Hear me out on this. He gave a very definitive statement that he is not interested.
Really.
He said, "I'm not going to do it, period, full stop." But that is exactly what someone would say. It's exactly what you would say if you wanted to be the one who they turn to in their desperate hour in Cleveland in July.
All right. Thank you very much. Eric Zorn, who, of course, writes a column for the Chicago Tribune, our Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, and Scott Stantis filling in for Kristen McQuarrie. Scott's, of course, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes. You can also hear it at WGNplus.com. I always post it on my Facebook page. It's there today. I just want to give props to the gang. You heard 9 minutes there of a podcast that went about 40. This was one of our better ones. They were in good form, and there were several other topics we covered that we didn't get to there, one of which includes our recommendations for the week, something you should read, watch, or listen to. I'll give you a little bit of that after this on WGN. Back to the Mincing Rascals. At the end of each week's podcast, we turn to these well-read, smart, busy people and say, "Tell me something you're really enjoying. What's your recommendation?" We started with Scott Stantis.
Yes, I just finished a graphic novel. It's new to me. It's been out for a while. It's a New York Times bestseller called Stitches. and I don't have the author's name in front of me because I'm don't you know God if only I had a handheld device where I could look these things up. But it's a terrific graphic novel. You ought to read it. It's beautifully done. The guy is a magnificent artist. He tells this really interesting story of a kid growing up in a very tough situation, and the last couple of scenes are just wrenching and wonderful. And it's read it, please.
Well, that from an editorial cartoonist is an endorsement.
Oh, absolutely.
How about Steve Bertrand? What are you liking this week, Steve?
You know, there's a PBS series that came back, or it's a BBC series, I think, called Grandchester. And my wife and I have started watching it. I think they're in the second season now. But it's this young Episcopal priest in some rural English town set post-World War II. And he fancies himself a sleuth. Sounds like every other BBC show. But anyway, you know, he's got a buddy who's a cop, and they go around. But it's an interesting sort of examination of this guy who's, you know, not committed to celibacy, but he happens to be single as his village tries to set him up. Good-looking guy with a little murder mystery in between. Grandchester is a show I like a lot.
I'll go next, and then, Eric, you go last. The book that I'm going to recommend is one I mentioned last week but didn't say very much about it. I had two recommendations. I'll repeat one of them this week. It's a book called Consequence by Eric Fair. He was one of the interrogators at Abu Ghraib, and he describes not so much the torture per se, although he participated in it, and feels that he almost can't be redeemed for it either. He's a religious man, and it haunts him to this day. The book wasn't even cathartic. He just feels like he has to share what they did, why they did it, and how well it did and did not work. And the book, if you've ever wondered, what was it like behind those walls? Here's one of the guys doing it saying, this was our experience. The book is called Consequence. It just came out by Eric Fair. How about you, Eric Zorn?
Well, I want to say that I've heard a lot about the book, The Arm, inside the...
Sure.
...that you were recommending last week. Also, I looked up the author of Scott's book. It's David Small.
Thank you.
And so my recommendation is me, as someone who can find things out for you. No, what I'm recommending is something...
That's the best Googler in Chicago.
Google, the search engine. Now, last week, there was in the Sunday paper, I think there was this little article recommending something called the Shinji Moru accessory pouch for phones. And you guys have probably all seen these, and I'm holding it up here. No one can see it except the studio. But it's a little thing that sticks on the back of your phone, and you can stick a credit card or an ID card in the back of it. And I got it. I saw it. I ordered it, and it's like changed my life. I love carrying it because my phone is with me. I put my wallet down various places. I lose it. But my phone is always with me in this little pouch with the little cards that I always use in it. Just a perfect
thing.
It's
adorable.
It costs like $4.
I can get you a little WGN phone wallet that Kristen Decker is displaying right now.
She does have one of those, yes.
Those little, they're great. Can I get one as just
a normal person?
No, hey, you have to be here six times.
You have to be Eric Zorn.
You have to have won 8 states.
Rule 12.
That's Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, and Steve Bertrand. Thank you very much, Bob Ferguson, our engineer and our producer, / Carol Merrill model is Kristen Decker. We are the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pot on you next week.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!
So that's how we do those podcasts. I thought I'd leave the tail end of it there so you can get the feel for it. The gang is good, aren't they? So thank you to all of them and to Kristen, who produces that segment, and Bob Ferguson was running the dials. Now we're back live on the air here on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. In that book that Eric was referring to, The Arm by Jeff Passan's, really, really good. He's a terrific talker as well as writer. He'll be our guest after the news. And one more note, you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes. You can always check it on my Facebook page, too. It's there every Friday. I'm King John on Facebook. The news is coming up on WGN. Great summer in Chicago, isn't it, Bob?
It's already here.
And it's already like... people are already totally into baseball, too. You know, normally, we're not totally into baseball in April because our teams just don't seem to always do that well.
They don't totally do so well. Yeah.
So we totally get into it when at least it's really nice outside. We've actually had some decent weather, and Lord, the Cubs are playing well. And the White Sox, too.
Yeah.
So it's really been a fun summer this April.
Oh, yeah, taking the L in here. I live in Logan Square, so the L... I couldn't find a seat to get downtown, so it was a lot of people going downtown, and then I take the red line once I get downtown and go to Tribune Tower, and it was a ton of jerseys.
Yeah.
So many people going to the game, which is very cool.
you know, I got family and friends here in Minnesota, and the Twins won their first game. So they are now, I think, 1-9 at a time where the Cubs were 9-1. They've got two losses now, but it was the exact opposite for a while there. The Cubs couldn't lose and the Twins couldn't win. And then somebody whispered into my ear, they said, well, the Cubs have scored 50 more runs than the Twins. And then, I may be wrong a little bit, but you'll get the gist of this. Somebody else told me the Cubs have scored as many runs as 21 other major league teams combined.
That is a good start, no matter what Donald Trump says.
Why? What did Donald Trump say about the Cubs?
You know, the Ricketts have been running these ads.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that are, you know, trying to take him down, even though they're Republicans. And he said in a speech, Cubs will be terrible.
Yeah, well, they go. And he also said something like, now, not just the Cubs will be terrible. He said they need to be careful because he's got the goods on them the way he may about Ted Cruz's wife or some idle threat like that. Not all of the Ricketts, of course, are Republicans. One of them isn't, but yeah, I get the point. So Jeff Passan has written the book called The Arm. It's interesting because this is America's sport. It is baseball. And the sport of baseball, the success of a team and the joy of a city is somewhat predicated on how well the pitchers will do for those teams. So suddenly, he writes, the arm is the most valuable commodity in all of sports. Think about that. There goes the value or the joys of a team. And as goes the team, so goes the league, et cetera, et cetera. And so just a handful of arms, you know, in their life hangs the balance of baseball. And then if you think, and the determining factor for the health or well-being of those arms is just that ulterior little ligament, a cruciate ligament, that little ligament in the elbow that sort of holds it all together, and that's the thing that goes when somebody's arm goes. And yet vast fortunes are spent on baseball pitchers betting on something you can't see, that little piece of tissue is going to hold, that it's going to be okay. And so the book is written all around that. He says that now, what is it, about half of all of the Tommy John surgeries, that's the surgery to repair that tissue or replace it, about half of the Tommy John surgeries are done on people between the ages of 15 and 19 years old. Can you imagine
really?
That? Yeah, I know. It's and it's not just the greed of the parents, it's the well-being of the kid. You don't have to have Tommy John surgery when you blow out that ligament, but you do have to have Tommy John surgery if you ever want to throw overhand again. So even though you may say, well, my 18-year-old just blew out his elbow playing high school or college ball, whatever, we're going to go ahead and get Tommy John surgery. That might not be visions of the kid being in the pros someday. It may just be someday he wants to play catch with his kid. But when Passan, who has a kid, started to notice how many kids are getting Tommy John, and he thought, well, what's the future for my kid? What's it going to be like? He dove into this topic. And he really tells the story well. I mean, from the history of the evolution of human beings, literally, like how we went from being chimps whose arms hang low to human beings whose arms come overhand and can throw. And by the way, he says the reason we evolved and succeeded that way was because on the evolutionary scale, we were able to throw spears. We were able to throw rocks at prey. So we prevailed, you know, in the line of Homo sapiens or whatever. We were the ones that prevailed because we had this overhand motion and we were able to throw a spear at a tiger or lion or whatever we were going to eat. I guess it wasn't those. And so that's why the overhand throw is so important to us as a species. You never thought about it that way. And he said, we're quite well developed as beings to do that unless you ask somebody to do it 110 times today. You never had to throw the spear that many times. So we're actually not evolved to do what we ask pitchers to do over and over again. So then it's a roll of the dice. Well, which of these young men is going to be able to do it more, better, faster, longer? And you just don't know. Hundreds of millions of dollars, John Lester, are spent on the gamble that arm on that kid's going to hold out. And the future of the city will be good. Okay, we'll catch up with Jeff Passan in a minute. Let's take our break here. We'll pick up with the author of The Arm coming up next on WGN. Looks like we're not going to connect with Jeff Passan. I know he had a bunch of interviews lined up. We are one of them today, but if he doesn't get to us in time, we'll have to call on him another day. That's too bad. I read the book. At the end, he says, okay, here's where they are now. And the book's dated a little bit. It's a few months old. That is, the information is, the book just came out. But about the Cubs' John Lester at the end, he said, okay, here's the postscript to that story. He talks about the bidding war that Lester was able to get other teams involved in, including, of course, the Cubs, who eventually gained his services, and how it's just interesting that you are spending $150 million, the kind of money the Cubs thought they do not want to spend, they spent on him. As happened to him every spring, Lester endured a so-called dead arm period in March of 2015 that spooked Chicagoans who feared their $155 million ace was a lemon draped in blue pinstripes. Though Lester's yips on throws to first base were exposed and exploited to the tune of a record 44 stolen bases against a left-handed pitcher, he turned in a classically strong first season with the Cubs, 205 innings, 207 strikeouts, 47 walks, 3.34 ERA. Even better, his batting average no longer zero. He had 4 hits and 62 at-bats. While Lester's 11-12 record last year looked more like that of a starter on a poor team, the Cubs were anything but. Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer's bet on the kids worked. And a lineup half filled with rookies led Chicago to 97 wins and an NCLS berth. The Cubs have the talent to be the best team in the NL for the next half decade. Even better, Lester's elbow felt good enough after 2015 that he did not need surgery to remove the bone chip and plans to pitch with it in 2016. One other note, so then he follows a bunch of people in the book. Some of them are little leaguers, literally, or high school kids. And then some of them are Todd Coffey, who pitched for the Washington Nationals, and others. And one of them is Daniel Hudson that he talks about. Hudson, real hard thrower, had Tommy John surgery. Doggone it, there goes the $1 million, right? He rehabs, you know, and the surgery is not a small affair. He said, we think of Tommy John's surgery. And if this book is anything, The Arm, it's about the two eras of baseball, pre and post Tommy John. Sandy Koufax, pre, but just on the edge of post Tommy John surgery. Sandy Koufax was never able to benefit from it, and when his arm was gone, it was gone. Tommy John was. Interesting postscript to that. Tommy John gets the Tommy John surgery. And people don't remember, he said, that it was at first a failure. 3 months after he had his Tommy John surgery, I guess they didn't call it that yet. It was not maybe first named after him. But the surgery we know by his name, his hand was shriveled up like a bird claw. He couldn't extend his fingers all the way. There was nerve damage. 3 months afterwards, they went back in, opened it up, moved the nerve around a little bit, relaxed things, and then hand was able to open. He had better range of motion of his arm, and he was once again able to throw. But for 3 months, his surgery would have been deemed a failure. So it's a long recovery process. And he says, we think of Tommy John as two things, the day that you have the injury and the day that you come back. And something happens in between, we don't pay any attention. He said, well, it's delicate surgery with, you know, risks and a very arduous sort of recovery rehabilitation process. And so then when they go back out onto the mound, as was the case with Hudson in a minor league AAA stint, you've spent 11 months of your life working, enduring, hoping, praying. It's not just the money, although that's part of it, but it's this gift you have, and you want to reclaim it. So he goes back out onto the mound. He's pitching in Chattanooga. He's on the mound, and he rears back to throw. And the scouts are standing behind home plate or sitting there behind the fence watching this minor league game. They got their speed guns out, and the first pitch comes in at 95 miles an hour. And they go, holy cow, he's back. Jeff Passan's joining us now on WGN. Hey, Jeff, I'm telling your Hudson story. It's so good. I'm stealing your stuff, man. How are you?
Hey, it's all right. Steal away. That's what the book's out there for. So you can turn into a big thief. That's absolutely your right to do.
Well, pick it up here. Thanks for joining us, by the way. As you know, I've read the book, thoroughly enjoyed it, and I was just talking about how precious the elbow is. And when Hudson had rehabbed the first time, he goes back out to the mound, rears back, throws, and the first pitch is 95, and there's sort of this silent hallelujah all the way around. He's back, right?
Yeah, I mean, he hadn't thrown a competitive pitch in 11 months at that point, and you never know what's going to come out. I mean, that's the thing. You hope it's going to be 95. You think it's going to be 95, but in truth, you really don't know. And so this whole thing about coming back from injuries is probably more a mental hurdle than a physical one. And just getting comfortable with the idea that this thing that broke the first time is going to work the second time is the highest hurdle to jump.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I suppose every city can relate to it. You know, we remember when Derrick Rose went back out onto the court, and you thought every time he jumped for one of those layups of his or dunks in the lane, something was going to pop. And yep. and you hate to see your players be tentative. And I can just imagine a Hudson or a Lester or any of these guys reaching back going, this may be the last pitch of my life. You just never know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what Daniel Hudson experienced the next inning. I mean, that's the sad part of it. He's out at 95 miles per hour. And am I ruining the story by actually?
No, yeah, pick it up. So walk us through what happens in that first game back.
Great first inning, you know, blowing guys away. Second inning comes around, comes out, and he's 93 miles per hour with his first pitch. And then he's 92, and then it's down to 91. And then it goes to 89, and he finishes the inning at 88 and sends me a text message. Had to come out. Arm feels like bleep.
You were there. You were watching that game. He texted you from the dugout.
Yeah. I was there with him, and, you know, we had had lunch earlier in the day, and the only thing he was worried about at that point was, you know, what kind of food am I going to get the minor league kids? Because he's the big leaguer. And when big leaguers are on rehab assignments, that's essentially their duty to take care of the younger kids. And here he is then, you know, his arm tightening up, range of motion is practically non-existent, and he fears the worst. And he feared the worst because it pretty much was the worst when he found out 48 hours later that the same ulnar collateral ligament he had torn was now torn once again, and his career was in jeopardy at that point.
He wanted to be paid like John Lester of the Cubs. How do you explain that? How is it that teams are willing to spend $100 million on something so risky?
There is no explanation. I mean, there's no reasonable or rational explanation. There is an explanation why baseball players get paid so much, and that's because there's historically been about a 50-50 split of revenue. And if the money is going up for owners, that means the money is going up for players. And we're just talking about, you know, market-based economics here. Fans are going to pay what teams ask, and until they don't, teams are going to keep asking for more. And so baseball is now upward of a $10 billion industry every year, and the players get their proportion of it. And pitchers are 40%, you know, 50% almost of the player pool. So pitchers are going to get paid, but it is such an enormous risk. And in the case of John Lester, you know, he has a bone chip in his elbow. And bone chips generally are not serious. And in his case, it's been asymptomatic. But at the same time, you never know what can happen when there's a little floater in there. And the Cubs knew that and still said, okay, $155 million, here you go. Because the desire to win exceeds rational thinking sometimes, yeah. even with a franchise as well run as the Chicago Cubs.
But how do you explain the fact that Nolan Ryan threw so many innings and pitchers I can't think of the names of, but historically pitchers, it seems, used to throw 400 innings, you know, they'd have these gigantic records, or they'd pitch maybe 13 innings in a game. How is it that they used to do that then and we can't do that now?
We can do that now. I firmly believe we can do it now. We just choose not to because it's the right choice. And it's the right choice in a couple of respects. number one, why is the 300 inning mark so lionized? And I'm asking this both rhetorically, and I'm actually curious. What's your answer? Why do we lionize 300 innings?
Because anything over that puts too much pressure on the arm, and then we'll be mad at the owners for running them out there too much.
Like 300 is such a special number because it's got two zeros at the end. And is that really the standard that we're holding ourselves to these days,
right?
That we like round numbers? We're not 5 years old, right? We shouldn't worship round numbers the way that we do. And yet that's why 100 pitches is now considered a lot in a game.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. We could absolutely breed 300 inning pitchers if we wanted to. Sandy Koufax, with whom I got to speak for the book, told me a story that I found very interesting. He said the Dodgers used to bring 600 players to camp every spring. I said, 600 players? Why? And he went on to explain that it was essentially baseball Darwinism. You either made it through and your arm was healthy when they asked you to throw, or you didn't, and you were done. And so they had no problem just essentially having guys who are collateral damage, in search of finding the guys who could throw 300 innings. Morally, I object to that idea that you're going to go and ruin someone's arm in search of something as objective or as subjective as 300. And to me, I think we run people who run baseball do a better job these days. The only problem is we've gone too far in that direction. I think we're too careful, and there are arms out there that are capable of doing more without getting hurt, and I think the fear and the money make it such that no team is willing to take a risk on that.
Be interesting if there was some caliper, some device that would test the strength, the current status of, you know, the mileage of that ligament, so we'd know.
We're close to that. You know, there's a company called Modus Global that has a compression sleeve with a sensor inside of it that purports to measure the torque on the elbow at any given time. Now, the error bars on it are monstrous at this point. But if the technology can be refined, and generally speaking, you know, tech companies are pretty good at refining themselves and making their products better and better each new generation, there's a chance that we could have something that players are going to be wearing on their elbows, and not just the major leagues, but down in little leagues, so we can have a better sense of how they're doing and what their health might be.
You and I have to be somewhere separately in 60 seconds, but give me the last minute and talk to parents of little league or high school players.
I will urge you to do two things. Go out and buy the arm, because I feel like it educates parents as much as anything out there. And if you don't want to spend the 15 or 16 bucks, go to pitchsmart.org. And if you are a parent of a child ages 8 to 18, read everything on that website, because it lays out in pretty good detail all you need to know about doing the best you can to keep your kid healthy.
And you're going to end up having your kids play fewer games over the course of a year, aren't you?
I really hope so. I live in Kansas City, so it's not like I have the year-round weather, but year-round baseball is the biggest pox on the sport these days, and pitch counts are exceedingly important.
Jeff Passan's book is The Arm. Nice to talk to you, Jeff. Stay well. Well done, too, by the way.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
You betcha. Take care now. We've got WGN Radio News right around the corner. Our Vibe Score segment is in the next half hour, too. We'll catch up with everything on WGN.
When they lay me down someday, my soul will rise and fly away. This old world will turn around. I'll be at peace when they lay me down. This life is a fairy tale. It's filled with tears and broken dreams.
Thank you, Bob Kessler. John Williams on WGN Radio. This is our Vibe Score segment. We always start the Vibe Score segment with a good listen to a good song, or at least we'll let you decide. Vibe Score is an app that I developed with Tom Hegberg. He's my cousin. It gives you a chance to follow the news and score the news. Download the Vibe Score app. It's one word, V-I-B-E. S-C-O-R-E. Griff, what were we listening to there?
That was a new song called Lay Me Down. It's a duet. by country legends Loretta Lynn and Willie Nelson. Yeah. I think you could hear those voices. You could have picked them out, probably.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think that was the best Willie Nelson has sounded.
Oh, my God. He always sounds good. But I love haven't Willie heard Nelson. Anything new from him in a while, and that is, the guy can still sing. I love that song.
Yeah, it's getting a 90 right now, and no reason not to. I think
no
it's
kidding.
A wonderful song.
I gave it 95, and that's about as high as I go. It was an emotional response, but I was so happy. And the video is so sweet, too. It's not silly. It's just the two of them striking some, you know, walking poses. There's a few scenes, but, you know, there's no hijinks to it. It's just great craftsmanship. It's so good.
They make it sound so easy. It just seems like, well, that's just a nice song, but, like, I don't know. Most people can't do it like that.
The name of the song is what again, Griff?
Lay Me Down.
Lay Me Down. Okay, what else we got here?
So we got in sports category, the San Francisco Chronicle declares that the 73-9 Golden State Warriors.
I know what you're about to say. Keep going.
Are the best NBA team ever.
Yeah.
Our engineer, Krista, is not happy to hear that. She's very upset with me for even bringing this up. I didn't say it. The San Francisco Chronicle said it. And we asked, do you agree? So 100 is agree. 0 is disagree. It's sitting at a 40 right now.
Yeah. The iron, yeah, really. Well, 100 is agree, 40 is disagree.
No, 0 is disagree, so it's getting a 40.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. The irony is that, really, the San Antonio Spurs this year are about as good as the Warriors and may end up beating them in the playoffs. So I get that. But I guess the question we're really thinking about is, are they better than the Bulls? And
absolutely not.
I think they are.
I didn't even know what Golden State was. So therefore,
they
automatically, just
Oakland,
on pop
on
culture,
principle,
they're not cool.
That's not how these things get decided, Deck. I'm sorry. I think.
But I feel like the best NBA team of all time needs to be one that everybody knows, even if you're not really into basketball. Everybody knew about the Bulls.
They should ask. Everybody knows about the Warriors. They should ask. So you've got the San Francisco Chronicle.
I love that you can cite your ignorance of something as, well, then it must not be real.
I'm pretty in the loop of stuff, so if I didn't really know what this was.
Okay, so
I don't think that one's going to stand up.
If naturally on the coast they say it's the Warriors, and here we're still clinging to the Bulls for obvious reasons. So we need to ask somebody in, you know, Kansas City, Denver, you know, ask them, okay, what do you think? Because we all have our rose-colored glasses on, but I've enjoyed watching the Warriors this year. I want Steph to keep that mouthpiece in his face, but that's my only complaint. I give them a much better score than 40, which means that we do not agree that the Warriors are the best. What's next, Griff?
In the movies category, the new CEO of AMC Theaters said in a recent interview with Variety that he's open to letting people text in theaters. Which is, you know, usually frowned upon. What do you think of this idea? 100's good, 0's bad.
Yeah, I gave it a 25.
That's high to me.
Yeah.
I gave it a 2.
I give it a 1.
Yeah.
Well, I've been known to take a quick peek when I'm in the movie theater. That's my problem. And I know it's bad, but, you know, I get it.
To me, a 25 is like 100 for this one.
That's, anything over 3.
It drives me crazy when I see it. I get it. I mean, my 2 was for, like, emergency purposes. Got to factor that in. But it's getting a 22 right now, so closer to your score.
Well, yeah, because there's a couple of 95s in there, a couple of people that are like, hey, I love to look at games and stuff while I'm at the movie. The movie chain has now walked that back. They say they're not going to offer that service. Good. So maybe they heard about the Vibe score and walked away from it.
Okay, I understand the idea, which is like, you know, younger people aren't coming to movies. The business is in decline. They need to do something.
Right.
But I just don't see how texting at the movie theater is going to make people come to the movie.
Lure them back. You know?
I understand the thinking, but I do think it would be very bad, actually. Like, the only thing they have that they should probably cling to is that it's somewhat of an event to go out and see something on a big screen. And with a bunch of small little screens in front of it, it makes it less of that thing that is all they have. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Maybe another way would be lower the price of snacks or the movie ticket. Somebody suggested to me you should give them the back 3 rows. And then at least, you know, nobody who doesn't want to see those screens will see those screens. Just reserve the back few rows.
That's a good idea.
That might work. That was part of my 25, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Griff.
I like that. In the TV category, Netflix premiered the new season 2 of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. on Friday. It's created by Tina Fey, stars Ellie Kemper and Titus Burgess of Broadway. And what's your score for this show?
Where are you on this one?
92. I love
Isn't
this show.
Isn't she the best?
This
she's
show is
delightful.
Awesome.
Yeah. I didn't score it yet because I haven't seen. You said they just started the new season?
Yeah, it just dropped, so you can watch it now. But yeah, I'm high. I still haven't seen the new season, but I'm around an 85.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a good score, that's for sure. What's next, Griff?
In politics, after losing in Colorado, Donald Trump called the system rigged. Or that's the quote, the system is rigged. In general, what's your vibe for the process so far? Do you agree or disagree? So 100 is the system's fine. 0 is the system is rigged. What's your
score?
That
makes sense.
Yep.
I'm like a 30 on this one. I think it is rigged. States and parties can do whatever they want, but it's not the will of the people that they're divining here. And Trump is right about that. Bernie Sanders has a legitimate complaint, mm-hmm. too. The superdelegate process on the Democrat side is even worse than what Trump's going through. This is the only. Mark your calendars, kids. I think Trump has a point here.
Yeah, I scored it a 50.
No, you can't be no 50. No.
Why?
50s. Well, because that means I don't know. To me, no,
your
actually,
system is rigged. We want to vote 50.
Yeah.
Don't keep
if
us
I,
from that.
If the will of myself is to vote 50.
God, I know. Listen to me. I'm a tyrant.
It's getting a 65. So actually, people are on the other side. I was very surprised to see.
You know, and I think when I first read the question, I was more voting for Donald Trump, against Donald Trump, being like, he's just a sore loser.
But then
the more I thought about it, I was like, but there are cases with Bernie and Hillary that I could see where people would say it's rigged.
Sometimes you got to agree. It's hard to do, maybe. But yeah.
But you know, if you are a liberal, and I think of myself that way sometimes, it means you have to be open. Here's my complaint about liberals. They're so liberal, they see that as a position to take rather than a state of being. And I think if you're liberal, you sometimes have to agree that the Republicans have a good point. Trump, in this case, I think, does.
I agree with you.
I'll stop preaching here. What's next, Griff?
In the Chicago category, we've got the summer film lineup for Millennium Park. And it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Soul Food, A League of Their Own, Thelma and Louise, Moonstruck, Silence of the Lambs, West Side Story, Grease, Finding Nemo, Purple Rain, and maybe a couple others. So that's kind of their summer lineup of movies. And we asked how you feel about that.
What do you think of that? We just put that one up, so you can check it out at VibeScore now. I love starting the season out with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I can't imagine sitting at Millennium Park on the grassy hill watching Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, come on. No, it's so
fun. Yeah, I would not. I
think
I wouldn't be able to do that, but
it's the best.
A lot of the movies are great.
Well, but the screen, you won't be that close to it. I think you need to have musicals like, I don't know, Purple Rain or Grease.
West Side Story,
like
they have.
Sure.
And Grease, yeah.
Or really big, busy movies like a Jurassic Park, you know, that you don't have to pay that close attention to. This is all good. It's such a nice place to be. It's hard to give this a bad score. Who doesn't want to go watch a movie at Millennium?
I saw on Facebook that WGN's own Nick DiGilio took major exception with this list of movies.
Oh,
he was not happy.
Hates Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Well, he hates Ferris Bueller, but even the rest of them, I thought, well, he's got to like some of those, but in general, he thought it was a very bad list, and I disagreed. It's currently getting an 86 on our app, so that's good.
Yeah, I think so.
It's not the most inspired list, like, it kind of seems like some of these might have been done before they could have pushed it a little bit, but I really like the choice of Moonstruck. I kind of want to go to that one for sure. I love that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie, that's for sure.
And Purple Rain, I'm really excited about, too.
By the way, weird story about Prince this week.
Did you guys follow
that?
What happened with that? I know he made an emergency stop in Moline, is that right?
Yeah, he got sick. They landed in Moline. He was there for a few hours at a hospital, got rehydrated or something, then the plane took off again. But at first it was like, oh my God, the plane's down. Prince is injured. He's in a way to hospital. You thought it was a crash.
We've had so many musical deaths this year already that's like, we can't take Prince. Please, not Prince.
We immediately took to Twitter to see how the world was reacting, and a guy in England just tweeted out, he can have all of my organs.
And that's binding. Once you tweet that,
yeah,
you can't take it back.
Black
if it involves
market.
Prince, yeah, everything else is up.
Vibe score is one word, VibeScore. You can download it, subscribe to it. It's free.
There's one question that we didn't get to. I am very curious on your thought.
Okay.
The logos on the NBA uniforms.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that one. Sorry.
What do you think of that? I think it's terrible. Your choices are tacky as a what was it, Griff? It's terrific is like 100. You're supported, and it's tacky and bad is a zero.
Right, yeah.
Lord knows the NBA needs another $150 million over the next 3 years.
Well, I thought maybe I scored it higher because my thought process was, oh, I'm so used to like NASCAR drivers. Uh-huh. It, like, I don't even look at the logos. I don't even really notice it anymore.
So
I thought I would get
used
to it. And maybe if they had another source of revenue, they would lower ticket prices so I could actually go to the games and afford to.
Yeah, if that happens, I'll change my vote.
But yeah, you're a few steps ahead of them. You're really, like, how could this benefit me?
Right.
Maybe.
That's why I look at all the Vibe Score questions.
I hated the idea, but when I saw the mock-up, and it's like in the corners of the jerseys and was pretty small, I thought if that's how it's going to look, I wouldn't have such a huge problem with it. I still was like 45.
It's 2.5 inches by 2.5 inches, a patch on the left shoulder. It's the one that they used in the All-Star game, and so now they're going to have your business here. If it said WGN, that would be pretty awesome.
I'd love that.
Mincing Rascals on Steph Curry's jersey.
Download the Mincing Rascals at WGNplus.com.
That's what we want you to do. All right, we'll pause here and catch up with the boys from the beat. Oh, and one other quick note. I'm taking a trip, a couple of them. I want you to know about one particularly because we've got just a few slots left, and it's really going to be awesome. I'll give you a couple of details in a minute on WGN. On Facebook, I am King John. I want you to like me there. I just posted an interview I did with Susan Kelly of Kelly Cruises. In October, my wife Brenda and I are going to lead a group on a Danube River cruise, and I wanted her to tell people about it. We have, I think, 14 rooms left, and it's all GN listeners. So it's really going to be fun. We had about a 10-minute conversation, 2 minutes of which I'll play for you here. She is describing for us part of the cruise, which will be, and among other ports, Budapest.
The ship actually, after dinner, will go out. She'll leave the dock and go out, and she'll turn around at this little island, and then she will come back down river, and so that you can see what they call the illumination. And everyone is out on deck. It is magical. The government buildings, the bridges, the churches, everything is lit up with these white lights, and it is a totally different perspective of Budapest, and it really is a highlight right at the beginning of our trip. And that just sort of kicks everything off. And from there, we go on to Bratislava, and from Bratislava on to Vienna. And I fell in love with Vienna, John, in December.
Why?
It is a combination, I think, of Renaissance, of opera and music, of cathedrals, and phenomenal food. So it really is just a fabulous city. We felt so safe and comfortable. There were wonderful markets that we explored. It really was just a fantastic place. And then in the evening, we went to a Mozart and a Strauss concert that was so unforgettable in this beautiful old building. We cruised through the Waku Valley and on to Melk. And Melk has this little Benedictine abbey. And I didn't know what to expect. And it sort of opens up, and it's this huge abbey overlooking the river up on a cliff. And one room is more beautiful than the next. And probably for me, the highlight, there was this library. And the library was something straight out of Harry Potter. It was crazy. It really, really was.
Doesn't that sound like fun? Susan Kelly, I want you Monday to go to kellycruises.com, or do that now, kellycruises.com. That's the itinerary we'll have this fall, and we want you to join us. In fact, I would love it if Kevin Powell and Mark Carmen came along, too. Are you guys coming on our trip? Wouldn't that be awesome?
I'll be there, John.
Oh, good.
Wouldn't miss it.
Yeah. It's going to cost you a little bit of money, but still, it'll be worth every dime.
Hey, I loved your conversation with Passon from Yahoo about his new book, The Arm.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff.
He is. I suppose you know all of that stuff anyway. Have you read the book yet?
I have not. I have the book, though, and I plan on reading it.
Yeah.
I worked with Jeff in Kansas City. I can verify that he knows what he's talking about, John.
Sounds like it, yeah.
He's very much in the know as far as the arm goes. I thought you asked a great question. It was an interesting conversation around the 300 innings. I thought that was especially...
It is kind of funny. It's a round number. Maybe it should be, you know, 193 or, you know, right. Or 375. Who knows? What's the highlight for you guys coming up today? What are you going to be talking about?
Well, we got the hero that is Joe Quenneville, who you know, got up and stood and did everything he could to get the Blackhawks a win last night, which a lot of coaches wouldn't do. So we're gonna celebrate him. But there's a huge story in town, John, and we're losing one of Chicago's great treasures, Benny the Bull.
Oh, I saw that.
Is hanging it up.
Well, the guy is. Are we going to get a different guy in the Benny the Bull costume, or what happens?
Well, I'm sure we will, and that's part of the deal here. We're gonna be on a search for the next Benny today, and we also, you know, we got to figure out what the latest version of Benny should do with his life, because I think clearly by his statement, which was very interesting, there's a lot of, you know, he's a lot on his plate. He's not exactly sure where to go. So I mean, I think there's a lot here.
Wow. Hadn't anticipated that, Mark. That's I didn't think you were going to go there. So thank you for that. Well, thank you.
I mean, he's really one of the true great performers in this city. The guy's phenomenal.
And he is.
And he went out on the right note, even though the team was so bad. I know, a little tease for the show. I'm going to share you Benny's last moment. I was there on Wednesday night.
This is the sort of in-depth sports talk you get only on The Beat here on WGN.
I had no idea. Well, thank you for that, Kevin. And Mark will be listening after the news, guys. Have a good show.
Thank you.
All right, we'll get you into the newsroom next on WGN.